Nachyomi for the Orthodox Union, Sefer Shoftim, the Book of Judges, Perek Tet Zayin, Chapter 16, Rabbi Binny Marilis. Chapter 16 reveals to us the ultimate decline, demise of Shimshon HaGibor, Shimshon Powerful, Shimshon the Nazir, one of the great figures, great tragic figures in all of Jewish history. And we're introduced for the first time to the character known in Hebrew as Delilah, in English known as Delilah, and how it is that she is part of his ultimate demise. We mentioned at the end of the last chapter that it seems by virtue of the fact that it mentions his years of service as a shofet at the end of the last chapter, that the ensuing chapter would deal with something that occurs sort of past his prime, past his peaking as a leader for the Jewish people. And we'll see some of his unfortunate flaws, per se, coming back to haunt him in a way that leads to his demise. Again, as I mentioned previously, keep in mind that Shimshon is always acting with the notion that everything is Mei Hashem, that everything happens from God, and that as bizarre, perhaps, as we may perceive some of his behaviors and actions and interactions, nonetheless, that they're intended towards the ultimate purpose, which is the destruction of the Plishtim. With that in mind, the chapter begins. Vayelech Shimshon Azosa. Shimshon goes to Gaza. Vayasham Isha Zona. Vayevo Eleha. And he sees there a woman, a Zona, a prostitute. A woman that's out there. The Zona can be understood perhaps a different way as well. The manner in which we understood it in Sefer Yehoshua with respect to Rachav, that either actually means a prostitute, or perhaps it means a woman who is mezayin, a woman who feeds others. The notion being that Rachav at that time was an innkeeper, that perhaps the woman here is someone who has a private estate and a place where people stay. More likely, it's the first. La'azosim le'mor. It's told to the people of Aza as follows, that Bas Shimshon Hina, that Shimshon is here, and Shimshon is a wanted figure. Shimshon is a killer in their eyes, a great and grand enemy. So they're told that Shimshon is about. Vayasobu vayervu lo kol halayla bashar ha'ir. So they surround him, and they lay an ambush for the entirety of the night at the city gate. Vayischarshu kol halayla le'mor. They're all lying in wait for the entirety of the night, saying basically as follows, Ad or haboker, ber hagnuhu, the morning light, we will kill him. It's essentially they're waiting for him to arise and to go on his way, and as he's going on his way, they will ambush him, seize him, and they'll kill him. So, vayishkav Shimshon ad chatzi halayla, Shimshon rests until the middle of the night. Yokam b'chatzi halayla. He rises at the middle of the night, essentially midnight. And again, an amazing show of strength and power. Vayechos b'zalsos shar ha'ir. He takes hold of literally the doors of the gates of the city. Uvishtei ha'mezuzos, and the two doorposts. V'yisa'im im ha'beriach. And he carries them. He takes them with the bariach, with the crossbar, with the threshold, essentially. Vayasam al kseifav, and he places them over his shoulders. Vayalim el rosh ahar, and he takes them up the mountain, asher al pnei Chevron, up into the mountains that face opposite to Chevron. So essentially, what he did is he tore out the entrance to the city, put it on his shoulders and carried it and put it out somewhere else. It's like an unbelievable show of strength. It's clear that they don't capture him. It's clear that they're lying in wait and an ambush doesn't sort of do anything. And they're so awed, perhaps, by the show of strength that they simply go away. And that they're fearful to the point by which they have no interest nor any part in taking on Shimshon or trying to capture Shimshon. But again, you see the great power and the great strength that exists in the man. An incredible show in that moment, in that night. At the same time, he does seem to put himself in a very dangerous and precarious situation by virtue of his consorting and being with this woman, whoever she may be. It seems one of Shimshon's great flaws are his eyes, and we'll see that going further ahead, that as much as he is Mekudosh Hashem Shemayim, that he is holy and sanctified and focused on the service of God and being the Shofet, the Moshiach for the Jewish people, he has this soft spot, quote unquote, for women. And the vision of his eyes and that which he sees, perhaps in a certain manner getting the best of him and ultimately causing his downfall, his petach, la petach to him, the opening that is his demise, is his feelings towards the different women, the initial wife, which he sets up in that situation to cause the situation with the Plishtim and to create a mode by which he can fight with the Plishtim. The follow-up to that situation in that woman's death. And now here, this woman, who was just a random woman that he saw and he consorts with and he's with, and then the follow-up action in Aza there. Now, as we're coming into the next section, we have Delilah, who will lead to his ultimate death and fall. The Gemara Masechet Sota tells us that this woman is aptly named, and Delilah meaning the notion of Dildilah. Dildilah meaning that she depletes his strength, that she sort of takes his power from him, his good deeds, his faith, his trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This woman, in some manner, creates some sort of a mix-up, in a certain sense, in his mind and in his soul, to the point where he, in a sense, maybe perhaps for just an instant, abandons his emunah, and he subsequently falls. The Da'as Sofer here, in describing the manner in which Shimshon and Delilah come across each other, describes a scene that was fascinating, where he says that essentially Shimshon is lying in hiding as he's doing all these different things to the Plishtim. He then goes into hiding. In the course of him being in hiding, he comes across this woman in a certain circumstantially, happenstance in a certain manner. And that it's really the first time that he falls upon a woman, and he comes upon a woman without any specific intent towards the harm of the Plishtim, but rather with real emotion, real feeling, and she takes care of him, and she feeds him, she watches him while he's hiding from the enemy. So he actually has legitimate feelings for this woman, and she legitimate feelings for him, per se. Chazal tells us that he convinces her as well to be Megayeres, to convert. At the same time, it's clear that she's not wholehearted in her feelings for him, as she deceives him and uses her relationship with him ultimately to cause and to lead to his demise. V'yachareichein, and so it is in the aftermath of that previous event, v'yahav isha v'nachal sorek. Shimshon loves a woman in the area called Nachal Sorek. Nachal Sorek, we mentioned before, is an area that leads in the areas of Dan, but also in the regions of Eretz Plishtim, Nachal Sarek, sort of, if one wants to follow the path, we mentioned previously you have Yerushalayim, then you have Eshta'ol and Sar'ah, and then sort of running through Sar'ah is Nachal Sarek, and it leads out towards the Mediterranean. It's just slightly north of a place called Timnasa, which we mentioned before, also north of Gat. And so Nachal Sarek is the area where he finds her. So this is within the what would be called the regions of Dan. At the same time, it's also within the regions of the lands of the Plishtim. And her name is Delilah, Ushma Delilah. In the interim, they have this relationship before the next pasuk happens, to the degree by which now, based on some knowledge of that relationship, Vaya'alu Eleha Sanei Plishtim, the actual governors, the actual princes, the actual leaders of the Plishti nation, come to her, Vayomrullah, and they say to her as follows, Pati Oso, entice him, convince him, Ureiba Mekacho Gadol, and find out, see, how it is that he is so powerful, Ubame Nuchal Lo, and what we can do about it, how can we overpower him, Va'asarnuhu La'anoso, so that we can then ultimately bind him and afflict him. They don't say kill him, just afflict him. And Va'nach Nitan Lach Ish Elef Umea Kosef. And each one of us will give you Elef Umea Kesef, which is essentially 1,100 pieces of silver. So if it's each person individually, and we know that there were Chamish Sanei Plishtim, there are five. At least we know minimally five Sanei Plishtim, five governors of the Plishtim. So you can do the math. 5,500 pieces of silver, which I guess would be a lot of money, but perhaps not enough money for somebody to sell out one of their loved ones. But Delilah takes the offer. They want to know two things. How is he so strong? And also, how are they able to overpower him such that they can afflict him? They know that if they ask about killing him, that she perhaps would not be interested. But afflicting him, so there that she has some interest. So she goes right for it. Vatomer Delilah in verse 6, El Shimshon, she speaks to him. Hagid Anali, Bame Kochacha Gadol, tell me, how are you so strong? Uvameh Se'aser La'anosecha, and how could one bind you and afflict you? She asks him straight out the two questions. Maybe perhaps she's doing it in a playful manner, she's doing it in a manner where she's speaking to him directly. Tell me, Shimshon, how is this possible? How are you who you are? Shimshon doesn't exactly take the bait. He doesn't trust wholeheartedly here. He doesn't buy in. You know, and he says as follows, Vayomer Eleha Shimshon, Im ya'asaruni b'shiv'a yisarim lachim ashelo charavu. He says, if you buy me with seven wet twines that have never been dried before, fresh, new twine that has never been dried out, v'chalisi means v'achalesh, I will become weak, v'hayisi ke'echar ha'adam, and it will be like any other man. So he clearly tells her something that's not true. And at the same time, he does tell her one thing that is essentially true. An underlying piece of what he said to her is that, in fact, there is a way to bind him and ultimately then afflict him. The one that he offers is not actually the one, but he allows some space here for that to be the case, as opposed to flatly denying her request, or flatly denying the possibility that such a reality exists, he tells her to try the following. Perhaps the following will be the thing that will work. Why that specific thing, why that specific manner, is not 100% clear. But this is what he says to her. He doesn't say how he is, that he is so strong. He only answers the second part. So apparently at some point she passes word, and in verse 9, the Sarnei Plishtim, the governors of the Plishtim, these whoever they are, bring her the materials that she would need to restrain him, to bind him, and then they can afflict him. Bata'asrehu bahem, and that she can use them, that she can use them to bind him. So they're supplying her with materials, and ultimately they would supply her with the kesef, with the cash, if in fact she's able to successfully afflict him. So how do they set this up? So she's going to bind him, and as she's binding him up and tying him up, so the ambush of Plishtim are going to lie in wait to see whether or not it's in fact true. In verse 9, V'ha'orev yoshev la b'cheder, and the ambush is lying essentially in the room. Essentially, they're in position. They're ready to go. If it happens, it happens. If it works, it works. If not, steal away. And she says to him, "Batomer ilav plishtim alecha Shimshon. The plishtim are upon you, Shimshon." Right? To see whether he can break out. If he can't break out, they got him. If he can't break out, nothing. V'yinateg esei yisarim. The twine and the ropes snap. In the same way that flax burns up or breaks up when it smells fire. That is to say, that it doesn't even have to get near the fire completely, but if it comes to come within the smelling distance of the fire, it flames up. And it does not become obvious as to how powerful he is, or in fact how to restrain him or hold him back. Meaning it was no difficult task for him to accomplish what it is that he accomplishes here. He clearly has tricked her. He has clearly not given her the materials and what she needed. And she's upset. In verse 10, Vatomer Delilah El Shimshon, she speaks to him again. Hinehi Saltabi. You're making fun of me. But to the berry like Savim, you're telling me falsehoods and lies. What are you doing? Shimshon, what are you doing? Ata hagida naliba me bamete aser. So she repeats it. Tell me how it is that you can be bound. What is the way? She now has left the first question out because he didn't answer the first question the first time. So she sticks to the second one. There they had a petach here. There was an opening. He allowed for an opening that there's a way to be bound. So what is it? So he says something else. Vayomer eleha. Im asur ya'asruni ba'avosim chadashim. If you bind me with rope, new rope, that have never been used, that have never been used for work, so at their fullest and greatest strength, v'chalisi, and I will then be weakened, v'hayisi ke'echad ha'adam, and I will be like one amongst the many. What the commentaries mention here is the difference, essentially, is as follows. Whereas before, it was simply new rope. Here it's essentially like a chuta mishulash. It's a threefold rope. So it's a rope that's made out of a variety of rope that are bound together to create this rope. Very thick, Rashi writes, and very heavy, that really should be able to restrain most anything. But he says this to her the second time. This is it. Delilah, if you want to know, okay, you want to know, fine, this is the thing. She believes him. Vatikach Delilah avosim chadashim mata'asreyu bahem. She takes these new ropes. Here it doesn't say that they supply them for her, but that she does it herself. Mata'asreyu bahem. And she binds him with them. And vatomer ilav plishtim alecha Shimshon. She says to him, she yells out to him, surprise, Shimshon, the plishtim are upon you. The harev, yoshev b'chader. the ambush again is sitting in the room. And this time he breaks them. They fall off his arms like string. They're like thread, like nothing. It's like a sick game that they're playing here. She's asking this question. He's responding. Is he mocking her? Is he making fun of her? What's going on here? He keeps playing. Like, what's going on here? You can imagine if, you know, something like this happened. A friend asks you, how can we control your strength? And you tell him one thing, and it's not true. You tell him another thing, and that's not true. But that you actually entertain the question on their behalf. Why would you entertain such a thing here? Is Shimshon simply so confident that he can play this game with her? It's clear she wants something. It's clear she's interested in something. But he continues to play the game. Vatoma Delila El Shimshon. Now in verse 13, they do this again. A third dance, essentially. Adhena Hesaltabi. To what end do you mock me? Vatidaberi like Kizavim. You make fun of me, you tell me lies again. Hagidali Bame Teasayar. Tell me how it is that you can be bound up. Now we're getting closer, really. Vayomer Ela, he says to her, Im ta'argi es sheva machlefos rashi im hamasachas. If you essentially weave the seven locks of hair on my head onto what's called a weaving rod, essentially, what it seems to be is that Shimshon wore his hair a certain way. He used to wear his hair in seven locks, into seven pieces. If you look at people who have long hair, they have, let's say, their hair up into ponytails, essentially. So let's say perhaps that Shimshon wore his hair into seven groupings, seven locks upon his head. He says, if you take them and you bind them and you weave them onto this loom, essentially, onto this weaving rod, and then that would be the way to bind me. Batiska bayaseid in verse 14, she fastens it with a peg of a loom. She sort of strengthens what it is that she's trying to accomplish here. So she takes the weaving rod. She then attaches it to a spike, right? Into the ground itself, essentially, right? So now his head is tied to this item, all the way stretched back, and it's pushed into the ground behind him. And she says, "Vatomer lav plishtim alecha Shimshon, the plishtim are upon you." V'yikatz mishna, so he awakens from his slumber. V'yisayas yisad ha'ireg v'asa masachas, and he lifts out, he tears out the peg from the ground. And the loom and the weaving rod itself. If you see the process here, Shimshon goes from talking about his physical strength in his body, and now he's moved up to his hair. We are, in fact, getting closer to the MS, and as much as he's telling her falsehoods, he really is providing her some level of strength, some level of proof, some level of a connection to ultimately the source here. Interestingly enough, in this situation three, you could call dance number three, essentially, he was sleeping. According to the different commentaries, that detail is either significant in that was the case each and every time that he was sleeping, or that rather only at this time he was sleeping and the previous times he was awake. Metzudas David says as follows: V'yikatz mishna so, ki masha asar aso betchila biyisarim v'avosim. That which she had done the first two times with the ropes and the strings, asasak kishahayane or, she did that when he was awake. Ulam erog tiltele harosh, but to weave and to work and to tie up his hair, lo hayameniach im hayane or, he would not allow that to happen while he was awake. Shehari ha-nazir, a nazir asur afil l'srok rosho, a nazir is not allowed to even brush his own hair. Pen yitlosh ha-sayar, lest some of the hair come out. L'zeh arga k'shehu yashen. So that she did this, she does this action while he's sleeping. Meaning, once we're getting into the hair, so here we're getting into an area that's very specifically unique to the nazir, and it requires other practicalities. Other commentaries simply say, no, that it really, in every case, he was sleeping, he went to sleep as she was about to do what she was doing, and he was sort of secure in what the reality of the result would be. Sort of an understanding of difference as to how one views each and every scenario. And here she's furious. Verse 15, Vatomer Elav, Ech tomar ahavtich? How can you say that you love me? V'libecha einiti, but your heart is not really with me. Zeh shalosh pamim heisalti bi. Just three times now that you're mocking me. Velohi gadat liba mekochecha gadol, and you have never told me as to how strong you are. Notice how that flips to the first question. The first question was, why are you so, how are you so strong? And the second question is, how you bind yourself? How are you bound? But she says, three times now. Vayiki heitzikalo bidvareha kolemim vatalatzehu. And it is, she torments him. She's driving him crazy with the situation. She continues to hammer away, to ask and to request and to hear what it is that makes him so strong. And she is seriously, essentially pushing him, pressing him. V'tikza nafshalimus, to the point that at the end of that verse, he's at the point of death. He would rather be dead than to do this, to deal with this. And at that point, he's so frustrated, perhaps, or he's so broken up, whatever it is, he opens up the door. Verse 17. Vayagid la es kol liba. He tells her all the deepest recesses of her heart, of his heart, everything that's going on in his being. Vayomer la, and he says to her, Muralo ala al roshi. Never has a razor come upon my head. Ki nazir Elohim ani mibetin imi. Because I am a nazir of God from my mother's womb. Im gulachti, my hair is cut, if I will be shaven, v'sar mimeni kochi, all of my strength will leave me, v'chalisi v'yisi kichol ha'adam. I would become weak and be like any other man. See, here he's given it. He is unburdened, quote unquote, his heart to her, and he is told to this great secret. Nazir Elohim ani mibetani mi. I'm a nazir of God from your mother's womb. She didn't know this. Not sure she didn't know this. Perhaps she didn't know this in the context of which he was asking the question, that it connects in some way to his great strength. Vatera Delila, ki higidla esko libo. Delila realizes, she sees that in fact he has revealed the true secrets to her. How is that that she notices this? It seems by virtue of the fact that by mentioning the Nazir Elohim, by mentioning that idea, that he belonged to God in some consecrated way, that was a sign of his true power and his true strength. And until this point, he never really mentioned that. But now, by virtue of the fact that he's talking about his Seyar, his hair, in this manner, he's talking about being a nazir in this manner, which in fact is clear that this is the truth. Vatishlach vatikra l'sanei plishtim lemor. She then sends, in verse 18, she sends word to the Sarni Plishtim, to the governors of the Plishtim, as follows. Alu hapam, come, arise to me now this time, ki higidli esko libo, because he has told me the truth. Va'alu ele Sarni Plishtim, va'alu hakesef yadam. The Sarni Plishtim come, and they bring their money. Vati yeshneyu al birkeha, in verse 19. She lulls him to sleep. He falls asleep at her knees, on her legs. Vatikra la'ish. She calls to a man, essentially is a, I guess you would call him a shaver, some sort of a barber of sorts. Vatigalach asheva machlefos rosho. And this person shaves off his hair. Vatachela anoso. And they immediately, it begins to afflict him, whether or not they actually afflict him, by virtue of his losing his hair, he's afflicted. And his strength departs. And then she does the test, as she had done the first three times. Vatomer, she says, Plishtim alecha Shimshon. The Plishtim are upon you, Shimshon. Vayikatz Mishnah, so he rises from his sleep. Vayomer etze kifam bepam beino er. He says, I will go out and I will fight just like every other time before this. And he had no idea that God had left him, that God had left the building, and God was no longer with him. Perhaps it's possible that he had no idea that she was going to cut his hair at that point when he went to sleep. Or perhaps it's possible to assume that even if that was the reality, that his hair would be gone, that he still had some sort of a belief that God would still be with him even with the departure of his hair. And he goes out, he's set to battle, vayochazu plishtim, the plishtim take hold of him, they seize him, he's not powerful, he's not strong, v'inakru es einof, and they gouge out his eyes. V'yoridu oso azosa, they take him to the city of Aza, we mentioned before, v'yasruhu b'nechush tayim, and they bind him in copper they put him in chains essentially. And he is made and he's put to grind in prison. Put to grind can be literally understood or it can be understood less literally. In the literal sense, it means that essentially attached him to a mill and he would walk around and around as he is bound to it, and he would grind up that which is brought from the fields and he would grind it into flour, and then they could use the flour or whatever it is that they needed to be done. That would be his job. A tedious task, an incredibly difficult task, particularly from somebody who has lost his strength. That's one approach. A second approach, which Rashi hints at, and other commentaries mention a little bit more in depth, is that he is set to grind in a very odd and very twisted manner. The Plishtim use his physical body and what they believe to be his physical strength to essentially try and populate their people with little Shimshons. The notion being that if someone so powerful exists, that they could create some sort of a power race, some sort of a legion of Shimshons, by virtue of impregnating the different women. It is a possible understanding of the text. It's not the approach that most of the commentaries take, but nonetheless, it needs mentioning. Either way, he is diminished and defiled by either task. And verse 22, we get a foreshadowing that his hair begins to grow back. And now comes the climactic moment, the tragic end of the life of Shimshon, in a whirlwind of action, miraculous last show of strength, and a last fila to God. In the capturing of Shimshon, the Plishtim throw a party to offer sacrifices to their god, Dagon, and to be besimcha, to be take pleasure, merriment in this event. Vayomru, and they said, Nasan Eloheinu biyadeinu l'shem shonayveinu, our great enemy, our great thorn, our great pain, the Shimshon, has been given into our hands. We should celebrate. Let us celebrate. The Yiroso Ha'am, they see him, Vayihalu as Elohim, and they praise their God. Right? They see Shimshon. Perhaps they were able to see him in the distance, in the jails, at the grinding station. They praise their God. Hi Amru, Nasan Eloheinu biyadeinu v'saveinu. Our God has given into our hands our enemy. V'eis machari v'artzeinu. V'asher hirba eschal aleinu. The one who is destroying our land. The one who has increased the numbers of our dead. They're making merry. They're making a big party. V'hi ikitov libam. And in the course of their joy and excitement and celebration, Vayomru, they say, Kiru l'shimshon v'yisachik lanu. Call out Shimshon so that he can perform for us. Let him entertain us while we are making merry. Let us mock him further, perhaps. Let's demean him more. Vayikru l'shimshon libeis ha'asurim v'yitzachek lifneihem. They bring him forward, and in fact, he does play before him, before them. How exactly is not clear. What exactly that means is not obvious to us. Perhaps our understandings and our visions from mythology and from history, we think of the Colosseums, perhaps in Roman times and Greek times, and the gladiator type of notion. However the case may be, Shimshon is sported before them. He is brought before them and diminished further. And then ultimately, Vayamidu Oso Ben Ha'amudim. They stand him between pillars. So it seems that what we're about to see requires a little bit of setup. It's essentially as follows. One has a home on stilts. The platform is raised on stilts, and it's being held up by very large, massive pillars, as one can see in antiquity, in archaeology. Shimshon is then placed between the two pillars, between the pillars, the central pillars. Vayomer Shimshon el Hanar in verse 26. Shimshon says to the Nar Hamachazik biyado, he says to the Nar who's holding him up, who's holding his hand, right? He can't see, his eyes have been gouged out. He says to him as follows, Hanicha osi, leave me v'hamishengi es ha'amudim asher v'habayiz nachon aleyam, and let me rest against the pillars that the house is resting upon, the house stands on. V'eshain aleihem, and I will lean against them. Seems sort of an innocuous request. The child, the young boy, has no idea. Verse 27, V'habayis malei ha'anoshim v'hanoshim. The house is filled. It is a packed scene. It is the place to be. It is the party of parties, men and women. V'shama kol sarnei plishtim, and all the governors, the great leaders of the plishtim are there. V'al hagag, and on the roof of that place, kishloshes alafim ish v'isha, some 3,000 people, haroim b'schok Shimshon, that are all watching Shimshon at sport. They're all watching Shimshon play. So now Shimshon is standing between two of the pillars that hold up this structure that has over 3,000 people on it. Vayikra Shimshon el Adonai vayomar. Shimshon calls out to God and says as follows, Adonai Elohim, zechreini na, v'chazkeini na, achapam hazeh eha Elohim. God, remember me, strengthen me, this one time. V'inakima, nekam achas mishtei einayim plishtim. And allow me to take vengeance and revenge for one of my two eyes. Chazal say that he asks for one of the two eyes and not both, and he saves the second one for Olam Haba. But here he decides and desires to use some of his chusim, some of his merit towards the destruction of these people. Remember me this one time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, allow me this, to take vengeance on the Plishtim at this time. Ve'ilpos Shimshon eshne amude hatavech. Shimshon grasps the two central pillars, asher habayis is nachon aleihem, that the house is resting upon them. Ve'yisamech aleihem, and he leans a little bit harder against them. Before he was just simply had his hands upon them, he laid his hands upon them, now he's leaning against them. Echad bimino, v'echad b'smolo, one on his right, and one on his left. Layom yeshimshon, tamot nafshi im plishtim. I should die with the plishtim. Let me die with the plishtim. Vayit bekoach. And he pushes and leans with force, pushes out. Vayipol habayis al hasiranim, and the house falls on the siranim. V'al kol ha'am asher bo, and on all the people that are there. V'yu hamesim asher hamis bimoso, the amount of dead that he caused on that day, on his death, rabim me'asher hamis b'chayav, more than all of the people that he was able to destroy in his lifetime, he killed in the moment of death. Thousands and thousands of, what a destruction he must have brought to the Philistine people on that day. Ve'yirdu echa v'chobes avihu, his brothers in the house of his father, v'yisu oso, they carry him, they get his body, v'yalu v'yikru oso, they take him up and they bury him, bein sarah v'yin eshta'ol, between the two cities of Tzara and eshta'ol, b'kever manoach aviv, in the grave, the burial area of his father, v'hu shafat es Yisrael esim shana, and he judges the people for 20 years. And so ends the life of Shimshon, and so ends for the moment the threat of the Plishtim. And for us, in terms of actual history, it ends the stories of the actual Shoftim themselves. We pick up with the remaining chapters tomorrow, two stories that actually took place many years before, but are placed here for a specific reason, and we'll see that reason when we get to them.